You have said that this latest round of rate increases is the last for a while for Duke and Progress. So how long is a while? And, you know, how is that possible to not go in for annual rate increases when it's been necessary in the last several years?
You know, Julie, if you look back at the history of both companies, so the Progress rate increase that we put into effect in earlier this year was the first rate increase in 25 years for the Progress entities. And for Duke, when we put our first rate increase in, I believe it was in 08, it was the first time since 1992. So we have had very long stretches of no rate increases. And this series of increases were really driven by all the modernization investment that we put into place to address challenges with our older coal fleet. So we built plants, and that generation investment has driven the need for rate increases. As we look ahead, we don't see a need for new generation for several years. And so our capital spending will be more to maintain the system, and we hope to do that in a way that doesn't drive a rate increase for several years.
So one of the things that is, though, different is that you are not seeing customer growth in the way that you were seeing during those years when you didn't raise rates. So rate increases have been one of the things that have helped your profits in the last couple of quarters that you've reported. So, again, what's the plan to continue to keep your shareholders happy while at the same time not raising rates, as you're talking about?
Right. So, and that's a very good point, because when you have increases in overall number of units that you sell, you know, that provides some protection for inflation and other things that could impact your cost structure. So that'll place a challenge on us, where we need to continue to drive costs out of the business. And one of the things that we have as a company is merger integration, which is giving us an opportunity to drive costs out of the business as we bring Duke and Progress together. So our objective for the next 2 or 3 years will be to continue to drive efficiencies in the business to minimize the need to increase rates.
If you're expecting for the new normal to be that your customer base does not grow significantly, partly because of industry economic situations and partly because people are more conservation-minded and they have smarter appliances and so forth, right? So if you're expecting for the demand to not grow, do you have plans to build big new plants in the future? Are you going to need those?
So good question, Julie. And we are seeing increase in number of customers. So our number of customers is growing at about 1%. And our usage is also growing, but a little less than 1%. So what that says is people are not using as much electricity per person. Right. So we're growing customers. We'll continue to need to supply generation. And so some of the generation will be as a result of growth, but some of the generation will be as a result of retirements. So the average age of some of our units will over time require them to retire, and we'll need to replace them. And both of those things could drive the need for generation.
And when the replacement plans come around, that's when the rate increases come back as well to start paying for that.
And so when replacement comes, certainly replacement typically costs more than the old, and that can drive a rate increase. But as I talked about a moment ago, we don't see a need to replace generation over the next several years. And as a result of that, that gives us the opportunity to harvest, save our costs, and reduce the need for additional rate increases.
So is several years 5 to 10 years or 3 to 6 years?
You know, Julie, I don't want to be that specific at this point, because I think we need to see how the business develops, but we certainly don't have plans through 2015, for example. That was a part of the settlement, and our commitment is to keep our rates as low as we possibly can.
Your predecessor, Jim Rogers, talked a lot about the future of nuclear as part of the future of Duke and Progress. But just in the last year, you've called off 4 of the 6, at least current work, on 4 of the 6 reactors that you had on your slate. Help me understand what the future of nuclear is with Duke Energy. It looks like you're kind of stepping back from what Jim Rogers used to talk about, that the only way we're going to be able to supply the needs of our customer base is through more nuclear.
So we continue to believe nuclear is important. And if you were to look at how much of the electricity, the generation of electricity in the Carolinas is from nuclear, it supplies 50% of what we produce. And so they're very important assets, the Oconee plant, the McGuire plant, the Catawba plant, very important assets to the state. But those assets are scheduled to begin retiring as early as the 2030s. So Oconee, Robinson, retiring that early. So we continue to believe that we would like to pursue the option of replacing nuclear with nuclear, and the Lee plant represents an opportunity for us to do that. As we think about the Sharon Harris plan and as we thought about Levy, those specific circumstances required us to step back and look at those plants. So the Sharon Harris plant, we did not need that power for 15 years and thought it was appropriate to suspend development at this point. For Levy, because of some characteristics in the construction contract, we were not able to get a license from the Nuclear Regulatory Commission before January 1st of 2014, and so we canceled that contract. We continue to pursue the license, again, creating an option that we might be able to pursue in the future. But at this point, we're thinking about those options as being important for the retirement of existing plants.
Will you resume the push that Jim Rogers had begun in North Carolina to get the legislation, the ability to allow you to recover more automatically the costs of planning and pre-construction from customers without having to go through the North Carolina Utilities Commission for a rate case each mm-hmm. time?
I think as we look at the Lee plant, for example, which would be the remaining, you know, option that we talked about a moment ago, Julie, I do think having regulation and support of the communities and the legislature and the regulators in North Carolina will be important for that plant to be built. But in no event will those costs be outside of the review of the North Carolina Commission.
But you would be hoping for something less than a full rate case process?
You know, typically what the processes are is annual review of the costs. And so the annual review of those costs of the plant would be a part of the process to put them into rates.
Is that legislation that you'll look to start up with soon?
Not in the short term. You know, at this point, the Lee plant's commercial operating license isn't scheduled until 2016. So we have, you know, several years to address that.
What's your role in recruiting new big customers? Obviously, you need new customers. Commercial, industrial, I guess I'm thinking of like the data farms, for example. That's big business for you in North Carolina. It certainly has potential for big business. So what is Duke's role in bringing that kind of business or other big electricity users to the state of North Carolina right now?
You know, Julie, what I would say is we are instrumental in economic development for North Carolina. We're part of the infrastructure of North Carolina. And when you look at the way the state has responded to the economic downturn, we've had unemployment at or above national average. We've had industries that have been impacted, whether it's financial services, textile industries, furniture industry over the decades. And so we have been very involved in looking for ways that we can work with community leaders and legislative leaders to bring industry to the state of North Carolina. I think it's for the benefit of the state, it's for the benefit of our customers, and we, of course, supply electricity to them. But I would say, you know, our primary focus is on economic development for the state.
Okay, so in the case of data centers, for example, they don't bring many jobs. Once the construction is completed, it's amazing how few people will actually work in one of these really big facilities that are using a ton of electricity. So I guess there's been some thought, some concern that maybe in those cases, the public isn't really getting enough out of it, especially when you consider that in these cases with these large users, they're getting economic incentives, they're getting nice rate packages. Industrial customers pay a lower rate than residential and small business customers anyway. So when it comes down to it, residential customers and small business customers are in effect subsidizing the success of these large companies that aren't employing that many people in the case of data centers.
Yeah, so what I would say, Julie, is I'm very proud of the work we've done with economic development. And at this point, it's data centers. We've also been instrumental in bringing other forms of industry and commercial development to the state, and I'm very proud of that and delighted to have a chance to work with community leaders in accomplishing that. You know, to have an opportunity to bring industry to the state that uses electricity 24/7 is actually a benefit to residential customers and commercial customers. Because when we have a base of electricity that's used 24/7 that supports the infrastructure and the costs of providing that electricity to the state, it's actually to the benefit of the rest of our customers. And so I see it as a win-win for not only the state but for the customers of Duke Energy.
So having a base meaning that it's reliable income that you can build into the cost of providing energy?
Yeah, I don't think about it as income. You know, I think about it as you have a resource. Let's take a nuclear plant. It produces power 24/7. If we have that cost structure spread over more customers and more megawatt hours, it's to the benefit of all of them. And that's the way I think about it. And so, you know, you think about the way Duke Power originally grew up. It grew up around textile industry, around big industrial users that used power all the time. And we have built, as a result, an infrastructure that's one of the cheapest forms of electricity in the United States, well below national average. And that was really built on the way the company and the industry and the state developed. And to have an opportunity to perpetuate that into the future should be an objective that's to the benefit of everyone.
Can we talk finally about renewable energy? Duke Energy has invested quite a bit in wind and solar in other states. Is that going to change?
So we have invested in renewables in Duke Energy really by supporting our compliance with the renewable portfolio standard, and we are completely on track with that. So by the 2020s, I believe it's 12.5% of our energy will come from renewable sources. We've been very instrumental with solar primarily. We've also worked with poultry and other forms of renewables in the state. We are also working with developing a green tariff that will provide customers the opportunity to bring renewable resources into their energy usage. So we think renewables are an important part of delivering electricity in the Carolinas and in the U.S. in general.
So if the renewable energy portfolio standard goes away, if lawmakers say, we think that was a mistake, let's repeal it, how does that change what Duke Energy does with renewables?
You know, I don't see a repeal. I think that was something that was on the table in 2013 and did not get repealed. Julie, I think it's become an important part of the way energy is provided in the state of North Carolina. And as you said, we have built, you know, over 2,000 megawatts of renewable energy throughout the U.S., really looking for ways to continue to develop those sources.
Well, do you see a day when Duke Energy is doing fully distributed solar on people's homes? I mean, right now you're doing it on some big buildings where you can sort of install a massive solar farm on top of a school or something. But is there a day, some utilities in other states are going to this, where the utility will put in a couple of panels on top of someone's home and then, you know, kind of slowly but surely increase the efficiency and pull from different sources besides coal and nuclear?
You know, I do think distributed generation will become more cost-effective and a part of the portfolio. But I mentioned portfolio, Julie, because it'll never replace everything that we do today, at least not in our lifetime, because these resources are important and can reduce usage, but they're also intermittent, and they don't work 24/7. And so to have a complementary set of resources that are available 24/7, along with the distributed generation, I think will ultimately be a great solution for the state.